Coming to you from the Cinema Lounge in the Carolina Asheville in South Asheville, it's Ken Henke.
Hello.
And Justin Souther.
Hi.
The Elitist Bastards.
We're recording this on October 13th, 2011. And
who are you?
I'm Steve Shannon. Why did I forget that again?
Why are you announcing this like you're on a golf course? Coming up now to the birdie.
This is tough. It's tough. It's tough holding the microphone and talking at the same time.
You should see him with gum and walking.
So let's talk about the movies you guys saw this week. We should probably start with. It seems like all of the films. There weren't any huge losers this week. There weren't any ones that were just eye-rollingly bad. Is that true?
Yeah, no. That's kind of true. Yeah.
Let's work from the one that seemed to be the one you seemed to have least enthusiasm about.
The loosest
enthusiasm.
That's right.
We'll start. Kenan has loose enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's true.
Years of enthusiasm. Has loosed him.
So you seem to have the least enthusiasm for Mozart's sister.
No,
I think she's less nice.
I know, and that's the reason I feel bad about that. No, I think I have less enthusiasm for the Ides of March, actually.
Okay, so let's talk about the Ides of March.
He would dispute this.
Who?
You would.
Yes, I did.
So The Ides of March is a George Clooney film?
Yes. Starring Ryan Gosling and George Clooney and Philip Seymour Hoffman and Paul Giamatti and Evan Rachel Wood. And it's fine. And that's pretty much the problem. That's all it really is. I mean, it wants to be a political expose. But really, what can you expose any longer that is really surprising? I mean, if it had been revealed that the George Clooney character had been caught molesting, a kangaroo, that might have been novel. I wasn't shocked.
It's because you like those perverted movies. Like that.
That's true.
It is disgusting.
You know,
and immoral.
Caught him with his hand in his pouch, yeah. You know, I mean, but this just was... Is it possible to disgust anybody any longer with... Can you be shocked by anything a politician does? And this didn't even seem that bad.
So, I mean, is this basically just the modern-day reboot of, like, Primary Colors, that sort of thing, or is it?
Well, since I was fortunate and never saw Primary Colors, okay. I can't tell you. So anyway, it's Ryan Gosling as a partly savvy and partly wet behind the ears, second in charge of a political campaign, becoming totally disillusioned with his candidate and the whole process. And I think the problem is that I was disillusioned before I got in. I'm too cynical for this movie. You can't horrify me by how slimy and bad the political candidates are. And this one wasn't even that slimy. So I was just like, it's okay. I wasn't shocked. I wasn't appalled. I wasn't outraged. I felt like I had seen a really solid movie that did exactly what I expected it to do the minute I sat down.
Were the performances good?
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. That's the problem. There's nothing wrong with it, but there's never anything amazing about it. There's nothing out. Clooney's first two pictures, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind and Good Night and Good Luck, both had extraordinary things about them. Leatherheads, not so much. I suppose this is better than Leatherheads. But it, like Leatherheads, I'll forget about it before... probably well before award season, and that's we're there. So it's like, I've nothing against it. You know, see the film. It won't harm you or anything. It won't insult your intelligence, but I don't think it's going to make you feel anything particularly.
Okay, so then let's move on to Mozart's Sister.
Well, that's rather cavalier, don't you think? I mean, we're going to double team Mozart's Sister here, are we?
The preferred term is Eiffel Tower.
I don't wish to know that.
just think about it for a minute. You can
whatever.
Google it, Ken.
No. I might find out and I don't need to know. This is one of those films that's called speculative fiction. Means, yes, Mozart had a sister. Yes, there are those who believe, and it's really easy to do. I mean, you can make a great case for what a genius she was, since none of her compositions have survived. This is, you know, anybody can play this game with anybody.
I'm a better composer than Mozart.
Let's see you compose something.
No, I've lost them already.
No, it doesn't work that way.
I had my windows down. I was driving along.
Smack him.
Actually, my lake house exploded. Pages went everywhere. Is that better?
Yeah, you see, I know. I like that, but nobody's going to know what that means. All right, Lisa will.
Anyway.
So what they do is they take this and pretty much make up everything else. And it's an okay film about Mozart's sister. The best parts of it deal with Mozart's sister in drag meeting the Dauphin, who then finds out who seems to have like a homoerotic attraction to her, and then finds out that she's actually a girl, and so he has a heterosexual attraction to her. It's all very peculiar. And then this kind of becomes a relationship, and the relationship has to end, and then he brings her back to court dressed up like a man again for a very bizarre scene. These are all the most interesting things in the film. Pity that none of it has any relation to the truth, because they're not age similar, and there's nothing to suggest these people ever married, but it makes for good drama. Problem with the rest of it is it doesn't make for very good drama. It's very nice to look at. It's very, you know, solid period piece. The biggest problem is that we are kept at arm's length from Mozart's sister in terms of knowing much of anything about her. She's impassive. She has no real expressions. So when it gets to the big key moment in the film that's supposed to tear your heart out, it's kind of like, oh, well, okay. I know it's coming. It's a solid, well-made film, like Ides of March, with some really good stuff in it. It's just not exciting.
Are you saying a movie about Mozart's sister isn't exciting?
No. Now, Paul Morrissey managed to make Beethoven's nephew interesting.
Well, so let's move on to Real Steel, a film I actually, based on your review in large part, I actually want to see. Well, I would recommend it. I don't know if I would say drop everything and go watch it. It's a movie about fighting robots.
Ooh.
And for that, it's perfectly fine. I mean, it's exactly what I wanted out of a fighting robot movie, that all of Michael Bay's explosion porn can't deliver.
You call it destruction porn in your review. I liked that. Okay, I think good. That was good. I thought.
Nevertheless, this too is a movie I will have forgotten about in a few months. But that being said, I enjoyed it while I was watching it. At 2 hours, it's probably way too long, but at the same time, I was never bored with it. I remember checking my watch at one point to see how much time was left, and I was like, oh, that's all that's left.
Yeah.
So it moves along well. I guess Sean Levy has figured out how to make movies after 10 of them or whatever he had made before Date Night.
I suspect that this is aberrant. This is all aberrant.
Well, I guess the next one, if he makes one more good movie. But, I mean, it's a movie about a down-on-his-luck robot boxer. His estranged son and the robot that they
find in a junkyard, yes, and believe in.
And it's an uplifting sports movie by the book, but it was entertaining.
Does the robot accidentally kill another robot in the end of the film?
Well, all the robots kind of get killed.
Oh, well, I thought maybe we were going to have a Golden Boy type ending. No. where the Golden Boy kills the chocolate drop.
No.
I'm not kidding. That's the name of the other boxer.
No, there's none of that.
Oh.
when robots get killed, it's on purpose.
Oh, okay.
Which is part of the reason they have fighting robots is because they can tear limbs off. And
so we don't get to have any great tearful speech about accidentally killing the opponent.
No.
Darn.
Not by the robot, at least.
It's supposed to be by the robot's father.
Okay.
The chocolate drop's father. You understand that the Golden Boy was written by the man that Barton Fink is making fun of.
Okay. Well, instead of big guys in tights, this is big robots.
Without tights.
Yeah.
They're naked.
Yes, big naked robots.
It's robot porn.
But it's fine. I mean, if I was an 11-year-old boy, I would love this movie.
Well, speaking of 11-year-old boys, Steve saw it. How did he like it?
I didn't see it.
I thought you did see it.
No, I would, but I mean, the way you described it, it seems like a perfectly fun, very entertaining sort of film.
Yeah, it's fine. I was not disappointed.
And that's as deep as Steve tends to go.
Yeah.
I don't, high art, nah.
I mean, it is cheesy, but it's a fighting robot movie.
More do you want, you know?
Yeah. No, it's perfectly fine.
There are limitations to fighting robots.
And it's not a stupid kid movie.
It's not stupid cheese.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a dancing robot. That's dumb, but...
One of the things that you mentioned in your review that I thought was interesting is that the kid actually has a somewhat mature, or at least non...
Well, I was worried from the trailer that this was going to be some whiny kid. Like, there's nothing I hate more in movies than the whiny kid. And there's a lot of whiny kids, but he's actually an intelligent role. Like, he's as every bit as stubborn and hard-headed as his father, who's played by Hugh Jackman. So they play well off each other. It's never too precocious or any of that. So I would recommend it to a certain sect of people, I think.
And particularly if anybody who's 11 is listening to this.
Yes, they would.
You never know.
So, however, I would say go see the next movie we're going to talk about, Attack the Block. I would recommend
it
to everyone.
Well, I would say,
11-year-olds included.
11-year-olds included, yeah. Definitely a...
80-year-old women, all of it.
90-year-old men, yeah.
So let's hear about Attack the Block.
It's fabulous. It's one of the best things I've seen this year. It may be the thing I've seen this year that I enjoyed more than anything else. It was amazingly well made. I'm vastly impressed with this guy as a newcomer filmmaker. It's astonishingly well photographed and lit, especially for something that's obviously made on a really low budget. The colors are always interesting. You know, they're very day glow, bright neon type colors in it. And the story is beautifully developed. I mean, and it's also, it's exciting, it's intense, and it actually is about something underneath it all. I mean, it is, at bottom, an alien invasion in a housing project in the south of London.
And like a lot of alien invasion movies, it's mostly thwarted by teenagers. Or yes. A certain subgenre of alien, the Spielbergian sort of...
It predates Spielberg.
Okay.
It's just that your
that's true.
Teenagers were a little bit different in the 50s. But I think one of the things that makes this work, other than the fact that the characters are really strong, is... these are the damn coolest monsters I've seen in a long time. You can't, I mean, a lot of times it's a guy in a suit.
Yeah. Which is sort of nice.
Yes. Well, it makes it solid for one thing. But they've been CGI'd up afterwards, and they've got these glow-in-the-dark teeth. But they don't appear to have any eyes.
Right.
Though when their mouths are closed, their fangs look like eyes. So they appear to be looking at you. It's a very odd illusion, but they are so black and dark that even though they're on screen full in front of you, you really don't get an idea what they look like.
No.
You're left with an impression.
I feel like that's sort of shrewd with
a
movie that lacks budget. You don't have to shove a ton of money into these,
you know,
big,
I mean,
these monsters.
I mean, what are they, you know, big gorilla wolf looking motherfuckers?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a perfect description of them. And it's exciting. What's really exciting about it is the fact that once you realize that likable people can get killed, not just extras that don't matter,
which
but
I
people
was
that
kind
you,
of surprised when it starts.
When the first likable kid got, yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit shocking.
But I mean, yeah. it does take place, and it's in a low rent district. If you've never been in a council apartment, council building, it's a pretty fair depiction of it, except it's not as dirty as the ones I... But it's 20 years since I've been in one, so maybe they're cleaner now. I don't know. Why does that seem unlikely? But what you've got is you've got a gang of hoodlums. It starts out with this gang of hoodlums led by some guy named Moses, and they're all either black or they are black wannabes. They're all rap pretender type posers. And they mug a nurse on her way home. And in the process of mugging her, this thing comes from out of the sky and destroys this car next to them, which she uses this to get away, and they explore what happened to the car and discover this thing in it. And the thing scratches Moses' face, but more than that, it scares him, which makes him lose face, so he decides they have to track this thing down and kill it. Which they do.
Which turns out to be a bad idea.
Well, yes and no, because I think the others would have come anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, in a way, they having done this may be what allowed them to quell this invasion. But we don't even know that it's right. A bad idea until quite on right. In the film. And then they take it and parade it around like some sort of apparently very bad-smelling trophy.
Right.
And then there are more of these things. And slowly they inadvertently become comrades of the woman that they mugged. And even more slowly you start to realize that badass those these kids may be, and potentially dangerous as they may be, and the fact that they are indeed a gang and they do carry a knife, one knife for a bunch of their kids. And I think that's one thing that really separates this from other films of its genre. What do you...
Well, what I liked about it was it's for once one of these movies where it's not white suburban kids fighting off aliens. I like that. That's a different aspect of it. I like the, like you had said, that it's sort of like, well, I guess it's, to me, it's like what Super 8
ought to have been.
Yeah. But so many of these movies should be, but aren't.
Well, you know, I mean, the biggest thing I think is going to be a problem with it, and this is interesting because Don Mancini addressed this aspect to me, and because he was a huge admirer of the film.
Okay.
And the accents and the slang. And I think people will, you know, they'll balk at this to some degree. And they go, oh, God, it's hard to understand. I don't know what this means. And Don said that what you do, and Don is not an Anglophile, so it's not like I can imagine Don, you know, knowing this slang. Some of it I don't know. He says you lean forward and listen hard and attune yourself to it like Shakespeare. And then after a while, you just understand it and go with the flow and start picking up the...
I never felt like I had an issue.
You didn't?
No. But it's rare that I feel like I have trouble with British accents or slang. Like, you pretty much figure out what slang is. And I read where they purposely kept it, the slang, simple. Like, they didn't throw too much in there. They sort of repeat everything.
Yeah.
So you can get a hang of it. So I didn't have an issue with it.
I didn't either. And I, of course, I saw it with someone who was raised in Scotland, so,
right.
You know, he's worthless.
No, I would recommend it.
I would highly recommend it. In fact, I would put it on my must-see list. So, and for God's sake, don't wait for it to come out on DVD. It really is impressive, large. Yes, folks, size does matter.
Okay.
let's move on to next week's Asheville Film Society. And it'll be here in the Cinema Lounge of the Carolina Asheville in South Asheville.
At 8 o'clock.
That's true.
On Tuesday.
Exactly.
So
what's going on?
What's this film?
This film is Michael Winner's I'll Never Forget What's His Name, with Oliver Reed, Carol White, Wendy Craig, Marianne Faithfull, but Orson Welles. And since Welles didn't get to do that in the film billing, I thought I would do it for him. It actually, Welles gets top billing, but that billing that I just read was what Welles wanted it to be until his agent basically said, "Are you out of your tiny mind?" And it's a fascinating film about a man who is successful, Oliver Reed, and he's a successful advertising, he directs advertising commercials. And he has a wife, two mistresses, an Alfa Romeo, and lots of money, but he's not happy, so he decides he wants to chuck it all. And he chucks it all by the beginning of the film by coming into his office with an axe and chopping up his desk, which is, that episode is greeted by Orson Welles, who was his boss, with Andrew Darling, "You're always threatening to resign." And the whole idea is that he wants to go get an honest job, which Orson says, "Silly boy, there aren't any." And it just, from there, as he tries to, as he puts it, he's trying to succeed, not to be successful. And everything that happens seems to be being blocked or in some way thwarted by Orson Welles. So he finally agrees to make one more commercial that tells the truth. And that pretty much is the plot. It's funny, bitter. I was just very bitter in many respects.
Right.
And some of it is still shocking. The Hamayasha Super 8 commercial has a couple moments in it that are really... The concentration camp footage is definitely shocking. And I don't want to give away any more of it than that.
It's worth the whole movie just for that scene.
But I wouldn't say there's more than that.
No. But I mean, if anything else, just sticking around for that.
If you stuck around for that, you're about 9 minutes from the end, right. So you might as well.
I just want to say, if anybody wants to leave before then, they should
wait.
Yes.
Okay, and that brings us to the upcoming films for next week. Attack the Block, of course, is one of them. Mozart's Sister is one of them.
Yes.
The Big Year is a film that's coming out.
Yes.
This is true. It is coming out.
A PG-rated film about bird watchers.
That Ken is making me watch.
That's right. I am.
Perhaps Steve Martin will comment on my review.
Perhaps he will. He ostensibly did once before, but I don't really believe it was him.
So it's Steve Martin, Jack Black, and Owen Wilson.
Yes.
Playing bird watchers who are trying to, like, is it a bucket list kind of thing?
No.
I don't know what it, they decide they... What is it exactly?
Well, the whole thing is that they want to be remembered for being the person who spotted the most different species of birds in 1 year. Yeah.
By who? Who remembers?
Oh, I don't know. I guess other bird watchers.
Be like, no, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you prove that?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Maybe we'll find out.
Maybe you will.
Just go to a pet store.
Oh, and then zebra, like, finch, and canary
you
bird.
Go to a bird sanctuary. Easy. Animal Planet.
A freaking gray parrot. Yeah.
That's what the internet's for. So you don't have to go outside and do boring shit like this.
I'm a little surprised that of the two films that I'm about to talk about, that you gave Justin The Big Year, because the other one that's coming out this week, leaving the big sort of release to one side, is Footloose.
No, I'm watching that too.
So you're okay. Because I was going to say that to me, if there seems to be one film that is likely to be the most awful out of all the ones that are coming up, that one seems like it has a pretty high chance.
Yeah, but, but
you have to understand where Ken and I would be coming from with that, which is,
we like the director.
Who's the director?
Craig Brewer.
What's he done?
Hustle and Flow and Black Snake Moan.
Okay.
I feel like this is not going to be good.
No, I do too.
I feel like this is straight work for hire, but at the same time, maybe it has something interesting in it. Maybe somehow he subverted Footloose.
Maybe. I mean, I've nothing against. I don't know the overage high school kid stars, but I've nothing against Andy McDowell or Dennis Quaid. So I mean, it's but.
And it seems like the plot makes. I've never seen the original.
It sounds like it's the same plot.
Well, it seems to make. Isn't it? In the original film, it's just dancing's outlawed, and in this they sort of give a reason why it's...
No, there's a reason why. Same reason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, from what I can tell from the trailer, it looks pretty much like the exact same setup.
Okay. I don't know.
I don't know if they'll have sparkly stuff on the screen during the Footloose number. That's
or
that
Chris
remains
Penn
to be
dancing.
Seen.
Isn't he dead?
He is.
Yeah, make it.
Probably wasn't at the time.
Is it Chris Penn that dances, or is it...
I don't know. I saw this movie once a long time ago. I never had a desire to see it again. I don't, you know.
I have hopes that this will somehow be interesting to me in ways that it's interesting to no one else. But
there you go.
And then the big release, the big film of this week.
The Thing.
Which is the prequel
to the Carpenter film. Which would make it essentially... The Hawks film with the same monster as the Carpenter film. And because this has
so
the whole get him out of the ice and thaw him out and he runs, you know, so, as opposed to he just shows up in the guise of a dog.
So, to clarify this, there's a Howard Hawks film back in the...
1951. Actually, it's supposedly a Christian Nyby film, but nobody believes Christian Nyby actually directed it and Hawks produced it, so everybody believes that Hawks made it. And if it is Nyby making it, he's doing an impression of a Howard Hawks film.
And
it's kind of like His Girl Friday with a monster. No, it's actually pretty good, and I think it's better than the Carpenter film, because the Carpenter film is one of those things where, and I suppose there are people that are still clinging to this, but I watched it within the past year, and it's like, those special effects might have been the bee's knees in the 1980s, but boy, they look pretty cheesy now.
There's definitely some creepy things about it, like the head with the spider leg kind of things. I mean,
yeah, but they look,
very disturbing.
But boy, they don't move well.
No.
This is the events leading up to the Carpenter film.
Which may or may not be an interpretation of the film from 1951.
Like, well, in a way it has to be, because we see that there are, you know, they find the creature in the ice and they take it into the encampment and they thaw it out and it runs amok. That pretty much is the plot of the Hawks film, so...
What's confusing is that they have named the prequel the same thing as...
Yeah, that is, really.
So,
it should be pre-thing.
That's right. And by the way, they're not calling it a prequel, they're calling it a prelude.
No.
Now, I have
as opposed to a quaalude.
I've read that there's going to be a lot of effort, there was a lot of effort spent to sort of explain things that happen in the Carpenter film.
Oh, right, like anybody gives a shit.
No, I'm sure that... There's people.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a nerd somewhere that wanted it all explained.
So, I mean, what's the expectation here? I mean, I don't know anything about the
Low.
Filmmakers, really.
Well, there's nothing to be known about the filmmaker. I think the guy's Norwegian, which means nothing one way or the other.
Could be a space alien, for all we know.
Could be, that's true. But he has nothing to, we've known nothing to go on about him, so.
You don't seem excited about it.
Eh. We'll see.
Okay, and that's all we have this week.
I think so. Are we done?
Yeah.
He says we're done. And you know, I would never dare dispute what he says.
Good.